Good morning. My name is Renzo Pomi. I would like to, on behalf of the International Service for Human Rights and Amnesty International, warmly welcome all of you to this event. In anticipation of the Human Rights Council elections in November this year, we will today engage with a number of candidates on their aspirations and vision for membership. This is the third time we take the initiative to organizing the Human Rights Council pledging event, following similar events in October 2012 and July 2013. We extended invitations to all candidates and wish to sincerely thank those seven of you who accepted our invitation and are here today on the podium. We are glad to see states representing four different regional groups at our event and encourage candidates from other groups to join us on future occasions. We much appreciate the support of the permanent missions of Tunisia and Uruguay in co-organizing this event. We welcome the presence of the two ambassadors here today. We are also very honored that Assistant Secretary General Ivan Simonovic will be our moderator. As you all know, Mr. Simonovic is the head of the New York office of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, a position he has held since 2010. We are very grateful that he has made time in his busy schedule to be with us. Assistant Secretary General Simonovic, may I hand you over the floor and moderate the event, please?
It's not that I'm hesitant, but my mic didn't work. So I thank you, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, dear organizers. Thank you very much for organizing this event, which I am happy to moderate. It is focused on the essence of the Human Rights Council, values that member states should stand for. Today, in front of us, out of 17 candidates for the Council, we have seven representatives of member states brave enough to publicly discuss what they will stand for if elected to the Council. This event also helps to build a more solid bridge between Geneva and New York, between member states' role here in New York in electing the Council members and the important work and responsibilities elected members have as part of the Human Rights Council in Geneva, and all this before the watchful eyes of the civil society. During the event, candidates will be given an opportunity to present their vision for membership of the Council and respond to questions on how they would realize the pledges and commitments they have made in seeking elections. I commend their readiness to engage in this discussion, reflecting their commitment to transparency in the election process. Let me also say that I'm very happy to see many of you today, both government and civil society representatives, because you have a very important role at this event, to challenge candidates with your questions, as well as giving them an opportunity to show their human rights commitment. The following format has been agreed upon. Candidates will first briefly answer a general question that they were notified in advance. This is the easy part. We will then open the floor for questions from the audience. So please start already thinking about questions you may wish to raise. We are streamed live on UN webcast, and people can also follow the discussion on Twitter, the hashtag HRCPledging. Those tweeting are also welcome to ask questions. We are looking forward to an interesting and constructive discussion in the best democratic tradition, challenge the candidates, but be polite and respectful. Before I start with opening the floor, I would like to give the floor to the core hosts of this event, the ambassador for Uruguay and Tunisia, for some brief opening remarks, Ambassador Gonzalo Conacher, permanent representative of Uruguay. You have the floor.
Many thanks, Mr. Assistant Secretary General Simonovic. I will be very brief, in fact. Dear colleagues, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor for my country to co-host this new event on the presentation and discussion of the pledges and commitments of the candidates to the Human Rights Council. I would like to thank the permanent representative of Tunisia, Amnesty International, and the International Service for Human Rights for the initiative and their kind support. We would also like to thank our moderator, Assistant Secretary General Mr. Ivan Simonovic, Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, as well as all the candidates that are participating today in this event. Last year, my country took part in the same event as a candidate, and we valued the experience and the opportunity to share our pledges and commitments, as well as the state of our human rights obligations in our country. As established on Resolution 60/251 in relation to the candidate countries, it is critical their contribution to the promotion and protection of human rights and the pledges and commitments made by these countries at the time of filing their nominations to the Human Rights Council. It is very interesting to see candidates from all different regions of the world willing to participate in this kind of event. In this sense, we would like to highlight the importance of having a competition within the candidates of the different regional groups to the Human Rights Council membership. This is the third consecutive year that we are using this format, which is having more and more acceptance among the candidates, ensuring accountability and transparency in the election process. This format also allows us to testify the importance of the role of the civil society in the promotion and protection of human rights, complementing the work of the Council. We recognize the valuable contribution of NGOs, both domestically and internationally, defending all human rights, especially those from the most vulnerable or disadvantaged groups. Uruguay is very supportive of the work of the Human Rights Council since its inception, ensuring universality, objectivity, and non-selectivity in the consideration of human rights issues and the recognition of eliminating the application of double standards and politicization. Uruguay has played an active and constructive role in the institutional building of the Council, strengthening its mandates and procedures. As a subsidiary body of the General Assembly and not of the ECOSOC, the Council allows that all issues related to human rights gain more impact, visibility, and legitimacy in the UN. Uruguay believes that the UPR mechanism has been a milestone in the process of strengthening the international system for the promotion and protection of human rights. We look forward to having a very interesting and interactive dialogue, which will give us the possibility to hear from different countries' perspectives regarding their promotion of human rights, as well as the challenges they face in the implementation of the current human rights obligations at home. And as I promised, Mr. Assistant Secretary General, I have been very brief. I give you back the floor, and I thank you, Mr. Moderator.
I thank you very much, and I give the floor to the Ambassador Mohamed Khaled Khiari, permanent representative of Tunisia.
Thank you, Mr. Assistant Secretary General, for giving me the floor, and thank you for being with us today. I would like to thank Ambassador, His Excellency Ambassador Fulger, for his opening remark. I share, of course, all the substance in this presentation. I will be more brief to say to our colleagues and excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, that it is our pleasure also to be here with you today. Tunisia is honored to co-sponsor this important event jointly with the mission of Uruguay. And I would like to start by thanking Amnesty International and the International Service for Human Rights for taking this initiative and giving the opportunity to the candidates of Human Rights Council to present their vision and their aspirations of membership on the Council. And we sincerely hope that they will keep this kind of initiative as a tradition to allow more interactions between the candidates and all other stakeholders, and also to what has been said by Mr. Simonovic, to solidify the bridge between Geneva and New York. Allow me also to welcome our guests and the seven candidate states who accepted to be there today, hoping that today's discussion will contribute in enhancing their knowledge on the upcoming Human Rights Council election and give them a chance to interact with our speakers. I will conclude my statement by reiterating the determination of my country, Tunisia, to continue contributing to the work of Human Rights Council and to promote human rights at national and international levels and to support the work of this very important organ in the United Nations, which is in charge of implementing the one of the main pillars of the United Nations. So we support this initiative, we will continue to support this initiative in the future. We look forward for an interactive discussion and constructive discussion, and good luck to all our guests. And thank you very much again for the two institutions for organizing and continuing to organize these events.
Thank you, Mohamed. We will now begin discussion with the candidates. Each candidate was sent the same question in preparation for the event. And we will begin by allowing each candidate to give a short, prepared presentation in response. The question is, which human rights issue is a particular challenge in your country, and how can or could the Human Rights Council and its mechanisms assist in addressing this? Candidates have 3 to 4 minutes to answer, and we will proceed in alphabetical order. Albania has never been a Human Rights Council member. It has ratified 9 core human rights treaties. I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Albania, Mr. Petrika Jorgi, for his answer to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. At the outset, I would like to thank Amnesty International and the International Service for Human Rights for organizing this event for the third year. I also wish to thank the delegations of Uruguay and Tunisia for helping in this regard, and also would like to express my that I'm very pleased for having Assistant Secretary General Simonovic moderating this event. Mr. Moderator, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, Albania has presented its candidature to the United Nations Human Rights Council for the term 2015-2017, based on the respect for commitment and belief for the universality and indivisibility of human rights, guided by the principles of impartiality, objectivity, and non-selectivity. This is part of our efforts toward building society based on human rights, democracy, and the rule of law. A positive model of peaceful coexistence in a multi-religious society, Albania is in forefront of efforts to promote dialogue and understanding between cultures and civilizations, with a view to, inter alia, better promote, protect human rights worldwide. The Republic of Albania is committed to the promotion and protection of human rights at the national, regional, and international levels. Albania is party to all core United Nations and regional human rights treaties and instruments, which are directly transponded into Albanian legislation and have superiority on the national laws. Over the last years, Albania has carried out a major legislative reform in order to ensure full compliance with the relevant provisions of the ratified international treaties and instruments. The legal, institutional, and policy framework on human rights in Albania has been improved in different fields, including the non-discrimination, the protection of rights of women and children, gender equality, domestic violence, fight against trafficking of human beings, the right of persons with disabilities, education, health care, justice system, fight against corruption, etc. Albanian institutions have undertaken a series of measures and activities to promote and protect human rights, aiming at implementing its recommendations. Furthermore, several strategies of action plans have been adopted, reviewed, and implemented. The rule of law and respect for and protection of human rights are important objectives of the government program, which also include clear objectives related to education, healthcare, gender equality, social treatment, and inclusion. The independent national human rights institutions, such as the People's Advocate, the Office of the Commissioner for Protection from Discrimination, and Office of Commissioner for Protection of Personal Data, plays a significant proactive role in the promotion and protection of human rights, especially for the vulnerable groups. Albania is committed to uphold the independence of these institutions in line with the Paris principles. Mr. Moderator, ladies and gentlemen, now I'll turn to the question and to mention the issue of the main importance, which is the right of women, gender equality, and fight against domestic violence issues, which have been of particular importance and at high priority for my country. In dealing with these issues, Albania has taken concrete measures regarding the continuous improvement of the legal and institutional framework, the adoption of strategy on gender equality, gender-based violence, gender-based violence reduction and domestic violence, the strengthening of the structures and capacity building of professionals, the awareness campaign to promote the rights of women, gender equality, the fights against violence and domestic violence. The strategy of 2011-2015 and its action plan aim at determining objectives and tangible measures for the protection and promotion of gender equality, promotion of women rights with specific focus on children and women. One important objective of the strategy is the qualitative and quantitative increase of the participation of women in political and public life. The institutional framework for the protection of women rights has, since 2011, the Commissioner for the Protection of from Discrimination is a public independent institution elected directly by the National Assembly, is based on the Law on Protection from Discrimination. It is the responsible authority ensuring the effective protection from discrimination and from any form of behavior, including inciting discrimination. The Commissioner for Protection from Discrimination, in compliance with the competencies envisaged in the Law on the Protection from Discrimination of 2010, assists victims of discrimination by examining complaints or assisting them in court, conducting awareness-raising campaigns, monitoring and conducting surveys, issues related to discrimination, as well as imposing administrative sanctions according to the definition of this law. The Commissioner on Protection from Discrimination exercises its competencies to accept complaints not only from the public sector, but even from the private one and individuals. Participation of women in public issues and labor market. Provision of equal opportunities regarding participation in politics is always considered as a part of human rights and an indication of the level of democracy. Additionally, increasing participation of women in public and political life has provided the opportunity that the women's interests are better reflected when taking initiatives to protect their rights. The electoral code provides that 30% of the multi-nominational list each electoral zone must belong to each gender, and it also lays down sanctions for political subjects who do not fulfill this criteria. Currently, women hold 6 out of 19 ministerial posts, thus comprising 31% of the Albanian government, and 7 of them are in position of deputy ministers. While in the parliament, we have 28 seats occupied by women, counting for 20% out of 140 seats. Furthermore, women are also elected in the local government level as mayors, head of communes, head of regions, member of municipality councils, and appointed in crucial positions as prefects as well. The number of women in public administration and judiciary has increased in all
time,
levels as well.
Time, please speed up.
Mr. Moderator, ladies and gentlemen, being a member of the Human Rights Council is an opportunity to work constructively with all council members as well as all UN member states in fulfilling the mandate of Human Rights Council. If elected in this important body, among others, Albania will work to further promote gender equality and the rights of the most vulnerable groups, including children and persons with disabilities, enhance cooperation with the UN and all the relevant organizations on issues related to the promotion and protection of human rights, work towards further advancement of international human rights norms and standards as it might be further necessary, strengthening the protection of and promotion of the rights in order of older persons, and ensure their active participation in the society. The active participation of, in the works of the Council, the cooperation with member states, the expertise and interaction with the special procedures, sharing and discussing about the best practices of human rights, the follow-up and implementation of the resolutions of the Council are important elements that greatly contribute in the mutual reinforcement of the human rights situation both at the national level for the participating countries. In case of promotion and protection of human rights, countries could benefit more from related reports prepared by special procedure mandate holders, in particular the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women, the Special Rapporteur on Trafficking Person, especially women and children. Moreover, the relevant resolutions adopted by Human Rights Council, including the one on the elimination of all violence forms of violence against women, and the other one on the elimination of discrimination against women and trafficking in persons, especially women and children, regional and sub-regional cooperation, are of particular importance related to the equality and protection of empowerment of women. In conclusion, Mr. Moderator, Albania is committed to a more effective and responsive Human Rights Council in it and its mechanisms with a leading role in addressing human rights violations and promoting human rights. Albania's vision on the Human Rights Council encompasses a body able to promptly, effectively, and timely respond to gross human rights violations. Albania attaches great importance to the independence of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights and its role in promoting and protecting human rights worldwide. The Republic of Albania is strongly committed to the Universal Periodic Review mechanism as a crucial achievement of the reform process of the UN rights system. In this, for the first time, Albania was under the review in December 2009, while the second one was just a few months ago at the end of April 2014. As a valuable instrument of dialogue on human rights issues at the national level, the follow-up of the UPR processes provide for the meaningful progress in national human rights policies and practice. My country will continue to duly cooperate and support the Council's subsidiary bodies and mechanisms. In December 2009, Albania has extended a standing invitation to all special procedures, and it is convinced that their expertise, professionalism, and independence can further strengthen national action and contribute to the implementation of international obligations. Since the establishment of the Council, the country has been visited twice by human rights mechanisms, and Albania pledges to continue working with special procedure mandate holders in implementing their recommendations. and to further discuss and disseminate their recommendations among relevant authorities and stakeholders. I'll stop here while remaining open for further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now to Bolivia. Bolivia has been serving in the Council 2008 to 2010 and has ratified 9 core human rights instruments. Mr. Quiroga Carabajal, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I will continue in Spanish. Sorry, but Eleonora will do the translation. Thank you. Un saludo a todas las delegaciones. Permítanme agradecer las palabras de los señores embajadores de Túnez y Uruguay, quienes organizan este importante evento.
Welcome and greetings to all of the delegations here. Let me thank the ambassadors from Tunisia and Uruguay for their welcoming words to this important event.
Asimismo, agradecer a Amnistía Internacional y al Servicio Internacional para los Derechos Humanos por la oportunidad de este espacio que nos permite intercambiar criterios y opiniones sobre el cumplimiento, respeto y protección de los derechos humanos e informar sobre los compromisos asumidos por el Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia en este campo.
Let me also thank Amnesty International and the International Service for Human Rights for this opportunity that this space offers us to share positions and opinions about the fulfillment and respect and protection of human rights and inform about our commitments, the commitments assumed by the plurinational state of Bolivia in this field.
El Estado Plurinacional de Bolivia concede la mayor importancia a la cooperación internacional para la promoción y protección de los derechos humanos en el marco de las Naciones Unidas.
Plurinational State of Bolivia places the highest importance on the international cooperation for the promotion and protection of human rights in the framework of the United Nations.
Bolivia contribuyó y continúa haciéndolo a través de una participación proactiva en los diferentes foros internacionales para la protección de los derechos humanos a nivel internacional y regional y ha cumplido con responsabilidad los compromisos internacionales asumidos en este campo.
Bolivia contributed and continues to contribute through proactive participation in the various international fora for the protection of human rights, both internationally and regionally, and has met with its responsibilities, international responsibilities, taken on in this regard.
En esta oportunidad también Bolivia se compromete a jerarquizar la temática de los derechos humanos y su consolidación para que el Consejo de Derechos Humanos pueda continuar fortaleciendo su liderazgo multilateral.
With this opportunity, Bolivia commits to prioritizing the topic, the theme of human rights and its consolidation so that the Human Rights Council can continue to strengthen its multilateral leadership in this regard.
Con relación a la pregunta de referencia, Bolivia es parte de todos los instrumentos que componen la Carta Internacional de los Derechos Humanos y de muchas otras convenciones universales y regionales para la protección de los derechos humanos. Nuestra Constitución Política del Estado, construida y aprobada participativamente desde la Asamblea Constituyente, reconoce de manera explícita los derechos humanos en más de 200 artículos.
In regard to the first question, Bolivia is part of all the instruments that make up the International Bill on Human Rights and many other universal and regional conventions for the protection of rights. Our constitution was defined and approved with the participation of the Constitutional Assembly and recognizes explicitly human rights within its constitution in more than 200 articles.
A partir de este marco normativo, trabajamos en la implementación de los derechos humanos con el horizonte del vivir bien en armonía con la Madre Tierra, mediante leyes, decretos y políticas públicas que se elaboran de manera participativa.
From this normative framework, we work for the implementation of human rights from a point of living well in harmony with Mother Earth through our laws, our decrees, our public policies, which we elaborate through a participative means.
El camino no ha sido fácil. Hemos heredado un Estado con problemas estructurales de larga data que luego de las luchas sociales del pueblo boliviano lograron grandes avances que es importante remarcar. Permítanme citar brevemente los más importantes.
The path has not been easy. We have taken on a state with structural problems going back years, which after a social struggle within the Bolivian state, we have managed great advances, which is important to highlight. Let me highlight briefly some of the most important.
El modelo económico, social, comunitario y productivo implementado desde el 2006, año en que asumió la presidencia Evo Morales, nos permitió recuperar el control de sectores estratégicos de la economía. Con este excedente...
The economic, social, communitarian and productive model implemented since 2006, the year that President Evo Morales Amaya came to power, has enabled us to recuperate the control of strategic sectors of the economy.
Con este excedente económico, aplicamos una política de redistribución del ingreso, entre otras a través de transferencias directas a sectores específicos, como el bono Juancito Pinto, bono Juan Azurduy, renta dignidad, la renta solidaria. Se incrementó la inversión pública, así como los salarios de forma inversamente proporcional.
From this economic vector, we have applied a policy of income redistribution, amongst others, through direct transfers to specific sectors, such as bono Juancito Pinto, bono Juana Azurduy, rent with dignity, rent with solidarity, and we've increased the public investment, along with offering salaries in proportion to need.
Desde entonces, la economía tiene tasas de crecimiento sostenidas, llegando el 2013 al 6,8%, la más alta de los últimos 38 años y la tercera a nivel regional. Las mayores recaudaciones, el incremento de tributarias, el incremento de los ingresos por la venta de gas natural, el manejo austero del gasto corriente y los niveles récord de inversión pública contribuyeron al crecimiento de la economía y al proceso de industrialización.
Since then, the economy has had rates of growth which have reached 6.8% in 2013, the highest increase in the last 38 years, and the third at regional level. The main sources of income and the increase of income through the sale of natural gas, the economic management of the public monies and the high level of public investment have all contributed to the increase in the economy and the process of industrialization.
A partir de estos cambios logramos reducir la extrema pobreza del 38% el 2005 al 18% el 2013. En la práctica, esto significa que en Bolivia cerca de 2 millones de personas de un país de 10 superaron la extrema pobreza, alcanzando de esta manera la meta del primer objetivo de desarrollo del milenio.
Through these changes, we have managed to reduce extreme poverty from 38% in 2005 to 18% in 2013. This means that Bolivia, of which there are almost 2 million people, has come close to meeting its first objective of the Millennium Goals. I'm sorry.
Continuamos implementando los derechos humanos constitucionalizados y hemos desarrollado indicadores para 6 derechos priorizados: educación, trabajo, salud, alimentación adecuada, vivienda y el derecho de las mujeres a una vida libre de violencia.
We continue implementing our constitutional human rights and we've been developing indicators for 6 key rights: education, work, health, a good standard of food, housing, and the rights of women to a life without violence.
Actualmente desarrollamos nuevos indicadores para otras temáticas como el derecho humano al agua y saneamiento, la lucha contra la trata y tráfico de personas, y el acceso a la justicia y juicio justo.
We're currently developing new indicators for other themes, such as the right to water and health, the struggle against the trafficking of people, the access to justice and fair trial.
En Bolivia hemos erradicado el analfabetismo y además elaboramos de manera participativa con las naciones y pueblos indígena originario campesinos la currícula educativa para incorporar sus saberes y conocimientos, valores y cosmovisiones.
In Bolivia, we are eradicating illiteracy And at the same time, we are developing a participative engagement with nations and peoples from the indigenous original peoples.
Time.
Through an educative curriculum to incorporate their knowledge and their values and their visions of the cosmos. Since 2013, the Aymara nations, Quechua, Guarani, Kikitana, Ayora, Guayara, and Moxenia are part of this transformation of education through the educative councils of the original people.
A partir de estos elementos, podemos señalar que el mayor desafío que tenemos como país es continuar implementando estos avances en derechos humanos que nos lleven a lograr el vivir bien en armonía y equilibrio con la Madre Tierra para todas y todos los bolivianos.
We can therefore highlight that the main challenge that we have as a country is to continue implementing these advances in human rights so that we can reach a level of living well in harmony and with Mother Earth so that for all of the Bolivian people.
Sin embargo, en la cosmovisión de los pueblos indígenas, todo está interrelacionado. Es decir, que un solo Estado no puede alcanzar el vivir bien. Es necesario el trabajo de toda la humanidad porque todos somos interdependientes. No solamente entre seres humanos, sino también con la Madre Tierra.
However, in the cosmos of the indigenous peoples, everything is interrelated. That is to say, not one state can reach the stage of living well. It's necessary to work all of humanity together so that we are interdependent, not only as human beings, but also with Mother Earth.
En este sentido, consideramos muy importante formar parte del Consejo de Derechos Humanos con derecho a voz y voto. Esto nos permitirá compartir nuestros valores y experiencias alcanzadas hasta el momento con la comunidad internacional.
In this sense, it's very important to be part of the Human Rights Council with the right to both speak and vote. This will allow us to share our values and experiences that we have had to this moment with the international community.
¿Cómo pensamos lograrlo? Fortaleciendo el diálogo multilateral para la cooperación activa en derechos humanos. Fortaleciendo la institucionalidad de los derechos humanos en los ámbitos universal, regional y nacional. Fortaleciendo la participación efectiva de las organizaciones y movimientos sociales, así como las naciones, pueblos indígenas, originarios y campesinos. Y promoviendo la igualdad de derechos y la no discriminación bajo ningún concepto y recuperando la responsabilidad de los estados por el bienestar de su población.
How are we going to achieve this? By strengthening multilateral dialogue for the active cooperation in human rights, strengthening the institutionality of human rights in the universal, regional, and national marks, strengthening the effective participation of organizations and social movements, as well as peoples, indigenous communities, original populations, and rural dwellers. We will promote the equality of rights and non-discrimination under any circumstance and recover the responsibility of states for the well-being of their population.
En síntesis y por último, desde Bolivia asumimos que nuestro desafío para lograr el vivir bien y en armonía con la Madre Tierra no puede realizarse solamente en el ámbito nacional. Es un desafío universal que estamos dispuestos a liderar de manera conjunta con los pueblos del mundo. Thank you very much.
In synthesis, from Bolivia, we take on the challenge to live better and in harmony with Mother Earth, not only so that we can realize this at national level, but also we see this as a universal challenge that we are prepared to provide leadership for along with the other peoples of the world. Thank you.
Thank you.
I thank you, and the next one is Botswana. It has served in the Council between 2012 and 2014, and it has ratified by core treaties. Madame Mohomogobe, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, for giving me the floor, and please allow me to begin by thanking the permanent missions of Uruguay and Tunisia, as well as Amnesty International and the International Service for Human Rights for organizing today's events. Botswana is is participating in this event for the first time, and we look forward to a constructive and interactive dialogue. Botswana firmly believes in the universality, independence, and interrelatedness of human rights and fundamental freedoms in line with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Charter of the United Nations, and all other human rights instruments. We are strongly committed to the effective promotion, fulfillment, and protection of basic human rights and fundamental freedoms of all people, which are fully guaranteed by the Constitution of Botswana. Botswana continues to undertake extensive administrative, policy, and legislative reforms with a view to ensuring that its laws, policies, and practices conform to the extent possible to international human rights standards and practices. In doing so, we attach great importance to principles of equality, social harmony, tolerance, and non-discrimination. And as such, Botswana continues to play an active role in the strengthening of democracy, good governance, and the rule of law, as well as the promotion and protection of human rights and fundamental freedoms at the national, regional, and international levels. Botswana therefore reaffirms her strong support for the work of the United Nations human rights system and continues to actively participate in all its activities within the Human Rights Council and other UN bodies. Mr. Moderator, in accordance with paragraph 8 of the General Assembly Resolution 60251, Botswana voluntarily makes the following pledges and commitments. You have already stated, indicated that Botswana is party to 5 of the instruments, and we are endeavoring to improve on acceding to the other ones that we are committed to as a country. We became a member of the Human Rights Council in June 2011 for the first time since the Council was created. And during our membership of the Council, we have supported and will continue to support many initiatives aimed at protecting and promoting the rights of human rights defenders, religious freedoms, accountability for human rights violations, fight against racism and racial discrimination, women's rights, children's rights, as well as many other civil and political rights and freedoms. As part of its obligations, as a member of the Human Rights Council and in line with its commitment to support the UN human rights system, Botswana participated in the second cycle of the Universal Periodic Review in January 2013. In its second term, Botswana intends to use the experience it gained during the first term as a member of the Council to further contribute to the work of the Council and its endeavors to promote and protect human rights and fundamental freedoms around the world. Botswana continues to fully support and cooperate with the UN human rights system's special procedures mandate holders and further commits to issuing a standing invitation to all the Human Rights Council special rapporteurs mandate holders in the near future. Here I wish to add that this year alone, Botswana has invited the special rapporteur for minority rights, as well as the special rapporteur for cultural issues. We are expecting them to visit Botswana sometime during the course of the year. And all of this is really aimed at delivering on our commitment to promoting and protecting the human rights issues in the country. At the domestic level, Botswana continues to live up to its obligations as a democracy, with clear observance of the rule of law, ensuring enjoyment of human rights and fundamental freedoms, and good governance, which are characterized by consultations and inclusiveness, as well as a regard for the will of the people. Botswana therefore places a high premium on developing and strengthening national institutions that deal with the promotion and protection of human rights. Botswana is committed to continuing its ongoing domestic legislative reforms, as well as harmonizing national legislation with its international commitments. We also will continue to fully implement all our human rights obligations and commitments emanating from the UPR recommendations. In all these efforts to promote and protect human rights, Botswana still continues to promote genuine and active dialogue with the civil society. Mr. Moderator, now turning to the question, in an effort to address the question at hand, Botswana is a middle-income country. And having attained middle-income status, we still face economic diversification and unemployment challenges. Conditions of poverty still persist, as evident from the high percentage of the population living below the PDL, which is approximately 30%. Furthermore, unemployment remains high, particularly amongst the youth in rural areas. In addition, there's a high prevalence of HIV/AIDS, which has negatively impacted on human development gains. The persistence of these conditions are not commensurate with the country's Vision 2016 of eradicating poverty. The major challenge, therefore, is to reduce poverty and at the speed and depth that is required in order to meet the MDG targets by 2015 and the Vision 2016, the National Vision 2016 target, which is to eradicate absolute poverty. There's also a challenge with access to education. Although the government has made significant strides in its endeavor to provide access to education, we still have the challenges in the area of legislation, where there's no legislation which makes primary or basic education compulsory. There are dropouts in early years which continue to add to the already existing problem of illiteracy. Preschool education is only provided by private individuals and non-governmental organizations, and as a result, there is a low access to preschool education. There are cultural and language barriers which hamper the admission progression and completion of primary schooling by children in remote areas. The issue of undocumented migrants also continues to pose a challenge to the development agenda in Botswana. The large number of undocumented migrants continues to place a huge financial and resource and human resource burden on government. In addition to resource constraints, challenges are also faced in the area of security and law enforcement and limited capacity in terms of holding facilities or centers. The high number of refugees remains a challenge to Botswana given the resource constraints. Botswana is currently host to refugees from 15 African countries. And while the government continues to provide access to education and health care for the refugees at the designated camp, an increase in the number of refugees compounds efforts to find durable solutions for their problems. These durable solutions include repatriation, resettlement, and reintegration. Countries which used to accept refugees for resettlement have since stopped doing so in accordance with international law, and Botswana does not repatriate refugees back to their countries. Although Botswana has a policy of first country of asylum, which discourages the granting of refugee status to asylum seekers who would have crossed safe countries not seeking asylum on their way to Botswana, we have always considered such applications on humanitarian grounds. Another challenge encountered is the lengthy process in determining the status of asylum seekers. Mr. Moderator, I should be finishing very soon. The Refugee Act provides that status should be determined within 28 days. However, in practice, the 28 days are not always met. We also face a challenge in the congestion in our prisons. The prison's authorities are mandated to maintain safe custody and security and to reform and rehabilitate prisoners in accordance with the Prisons Act. The prison's authorities discharge their mandate in accordance with the scope of the Prisons Act and international treaties. The prison's authorities are presently experiencing congestion in prisons, which hamper this effort at providing humane and dignified treatment while in detention. To this, and other challenges are in regard to fulfilling reporting obligations that Botswana has in accordance with relevant human rights instruments and human resource constraints. However, in an effort to improve the human rights situation on the ground, Botswana believes that the Human Rights Council and its mechanism could enhance the state's capacities through technical assistance, promote full cooperation and engagement of states with the HRC and other human rights bodies. In conclusion, Mr. Moderator, we in Botswana pride ourselves on the importance we attach to human rights and the modest role that we have played in promoting such rights. We have sought to build a society based on tolerance, equality, dignity, and respect for all. While we are the first to admit that we may not have always succeeded in this goal, our country, however, continues to contribute to the protection and promotion of human rights, both at the domestic and international levels. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I now give the floor to my left side, Costa Rica. It has served in the Council 2012 to 2014 and has ratified 8 Human Rights Court treaties. Ms. Adriana Murillo, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Excellencies, colleagues, dear friends, good morning. At the outset, I would like to express my sincere appreciation to Amnesty International and International Service for Human Rights, as well as to the permanent missions of Tunisia and Uruguay to the United Nations for organizing this event. We welcome this opportunity to share Costa Rica's views on the work of the Human Rights Council, as well as our pledges and commitments for our re-election to this important body. The same goes to all of you present here today. We appreciate very much your interest in attending this event. Costa Rica has always supported this kind of public exchange of views with Human Rights Council candidates. Some of you may recall that during our discussions of the Human Rights Council review back in 2011, together with a group of other 16 small countries, we proposed to have an inclusive, equitable platform for each and every of the candidates to the Human Rights Council to present the pledges and commitments. Among those countries was Albania as well, and some other present here today. We did not succeed in our proposal at that moment. However, thanks to the civil society persistence, we are able to be here today sharing our views and pledges and commitments for the election of the council. We firmly believe that all candidates, and especially small countries, will benefit by presenting their pledges and commitments to the wider membership on a voluntary basis. By doing this, member states will also have better information in order to make their decisions. And we regret that not all candidates are together with us today, and hope that in the future more countries will join in this kind of events. Regarding the question raised for this session, we have a lot of challenges, but one of the most important for Costa Rica is to give account of the compliance with an implementation of its international human rights obligations. On this particular matter, engagement with human rights mechanisms, and in particular, contemplating the recommendations by other states during the UPR, has demonstrated to be very helpful to stimulate internal discussions and generate improvements in the national context. On September 2011, following one of the commitments made for our previous elections to the Human Rights Council, Costa Rica created an interinstitutional commission for monitoring and compliance with our international human rights obligations. This commission is composed by different national institutions and also has an advisory committee and a standing body to consult with civil society, which serves to maintain a broader and more open dialogue, as well as facilitating an effective feedback process with the different organizations and representatives of the civil society. The joint effort of the 21 institutions that comprise the commission resulted vital to provide information on the follow-up of the recommendations received in 2009 in the UPR and to prepare the second national report that we present very recently. The process of preparation of the second national report also includes 3 different open meetings with representatives of civil society. The Commission has also become the main body for the articulation of the necessary information for the report of the treaty bodies and its consultation with the civil society. This experience for us has proven to be very successful and has also brought about changes in the ground and in the way that we address our international obligations regarding human rights. Another important issue and that we would like to put as an example here, the issue of discrimination and racism was highlighted as a challenge in our first UPR. We recognize that minorities suffer in Costa Rica a high degree of invisibility, including in public policies priorities. To address this issue through the valuable support of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, the Commission drafted a national policy for a society free of racism, racial discrimination, and xenophobia. The policy was launched in December 2013 and gives priority to people of African descent, indigenous people, migrants, and refugees. We have now the challenge of its dissemination among the public institutions and through activities directed to the general public as well. But however, we consider that the elaboration of the policy and the process generated around it has been an important first step to address this challenge and to achieve our final goal to have a society free of discrimination and racial discrimination. Thank you.
I thank you. And now I give the floor to Latvia. Latvia has not yet served in the Council and has ratified 7 core human rights treaties. Ms. Ines Vreimene-Dexner, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Assistant Secretary General, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Latvia welcomes the opportunity to present today its candidature for the UN Human Rights Council for the term 2015-17. Election to the leading international human rights body would enable Latvia to contribute more actively to the important work of the Council in the promotion and protection of human rights around the globe in a spirit of genuine partnership and dialogue. Latvia has demonstrated its commitment in the field of human rights by undertaking a broad range of international obligations. Human rights have become an important part of the Latvian government's policies, both foreign and domestic. By putting forward the candidature, Latvia is willing to contribute to making the Human Rights Council stronger and more effective and to further promote human rights in the United Nations system. Latvia supports the Universal Periodic Review, which provides equal terms for every country's human rights assessment. Latvia has started preparations for the second review cycle. Being one of the first countries to issue a standing invitation to all UN special procedures in 2001, after the establishing of the Human Rights Council, Latvia took the initiative to encourage other countries to extend a standing invitation to UN special procedures. As a result, the number of countries that have done so has grown from 57 to 108. Universality of human rights, gender equality, and protection of fundamental freedoms, both offline and online, are of particular importance to Latvia. If elected, we will continue to promote this agenda in the Council. Ladies and gentlemen, as today's topic is related to challenges that the countries face and to the Human Rights Council's involvement in addressing them, Latvia would like to share its experience in fight against trafficking in human beings. This shameful act, often committed within the framework of organized crime, is also a gross violation of human rights and unfortunately mostly affects women and children. Latvia, as a country of origin of victims of human trafficking, especially young women, focuses hard on combating trafficking for the purpose of sexual exploitation. So-called sham marriages between Latvian citizens and third country nationals arranged in the other countries with the sole purpose to obtain a residence permit in certain countries have become a serious concern for the Latvian government in recent years. The new strategy for the prevention of human trafficking for the term 2014-2020 addresses these risks. Although Latvian criminal law provides criminal liability for human trafficking and for sending a person for sexual exploitation since early 2000, in order to address the recent trends, in 2013 it was amended by providing criminal liability for malicious provision with possibility to acquire legal right for a person to reside in Latvia or other country of the European Union or European Economic Area. Latvia will promote public awareness and understanding about risks leading to human trafficking, including sham marriages, both nationally and the human rights fora. Media and new technology companies can play an important role in raising awareness and educating groups at risk to human trafficking, including on the risk of recruitment of new potential victims online, primarily from social media websites. Latvia provides state-funded assistance to the victims of human trafficking. This includes social and psychological rehabilitation services, legal aid, compensation, medical treatment, access to education, and labor market. NGOs are involved in all stages, from reporting to identification and assisting a victim. Joining the Equal Futures Partnership Initiative in 2013, Latvia has committed nationally to build the capacity of law enforcement in fight against human trafficking. We believe that enhanced cooperation between law enforcement, judiciary, and service providers to victims should be further facilitated. Ladies and gentlemen, given the transnational nature of this crime, national efforts are not enough. International cooperation and coordination, including regional cooperation, is of utmost importance to address this problem. Latvia recognizes that while significant efforts have already been made at an international level and many international regional instruments are available, more effective use of them should be made. Universal ratification and implementation of the UN Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime and its protocols should be encouraged. Improved implementation of other legally binding instruments on forced labor, human rights, and the protection of women and children would also contribute to eradicate human trafficking. Cooperation with the Special Rapporteur on Trafficking in Persons, especially in women and children, as well as with other special mandate holders in their monitoring of the human trafficking situation in the countries and providing recommendations is very important. The OHCHR recommended principles and guidelines on human rights and human trafficking can be helpful to governments in developing and implementing national policy in this field. Latvian government has used those guidelines in creating national anti-trafficking programs in 2004. Ladies and gentlemen, human trafficking is a modern form of slavery. Fight against it requires a human rights approach. Latvian government is determined to intensify efforts to prevent and combat trafficking in human beings and to protect the rights of the trafficked persons. I thank you for your attention.
I thank you. Now to the Netherlands. It served in the Council 2006 to 2007 and 2008 to 2010. And it has ratified seven core human rights treaties. Today it is represented from the capital by Mr. Lionel Ver, Human Rights Ambassador. You have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this event. Dignity, equality, and freedom. That's the title of our brochure, of our pledge. We brought copies for you all so you can read it if you like what our pledge entails. I will not repeat that. I will only highlight a few elements, and I think when you open the brochure, you'll see that it starts with the phrase, practice at home, which you promote internationally. And I think this is exactly what your question is about, what challenges we face. At home, we do face several challenges in the human rights field, and we've established a national action plan to improve the protection of human rights in the Netherlands. I will mention five areas where we focus on. The improvement of our national human rights infrastructure. One of our shortcomings, which was highlighted also in our first UPR, was the fact that we did not have a national human rights institute. Now we have one since October 2012, and this has boosted enormously the internal debate on human rights in the Netherlands. Secondly, tackle discrimination. Thirdly, protecting privacy and personal data. It was mentioned before, I think with the rise of the internet, this is more and more a crucial issue in our countries when we talk about human rights. Protecting the rights of aliens, illegal immigrants in detention in the Netherlands. This is also something that was mentioned in the UPR, last UPR debate that we had. Fifthly, combating domestic violence, child abuse, and trafficking in human beings. Also issues that were mentioned by the other speakers. We strongly believe that to improve these issues, these concerns at the national level, you need to engage in a dialogue with international partners. And I think the Human Rights Council is the most prominent place to do so. And we also issue an standing invitation to all special procedures and, of course, cooperate fully with all human rights treaty bodies. I would like to highlight two challenges to give you a little more detail. First of all, discrimination. For example, discrimination on the labor market against non-Western migrants, women and transgender people still happens in the Netherlands. And we are determined to tackle these problems. In this, of course, we are welcoming the input of the UN system. And I would here like to mention a recent visit by the working group of people of African descent which just visited our country over the last 2 weeks. They will report to the Human Rights Council on their findings, but I think their visit has been an important contribution to our debate on racism and discrimination in relation to cultural traditions. So we welcome this kind of visits and we try to engage with them also to stimulate the debate in the Netherlands itself. Secondly, the rights of women. Promoting equal rights for women is one of our priorities in human rights policy, has been for many years already. We join with France every other year to introduce the UN General Assembly resolution on elimination of violence against women. Of course, this has been an important contribution, but sorry to say, but also even in the Netherlands, complete gender equality and elimination of violence against women has not been achieved. So there we keep on working and we welcome, for instance, our reporting and the debates that we have with the CEDAW. In conclusion, I would like to say that the Human Rights Council for us, in many ways, is like a reality check at international level. It's also a marketplace where we can bring ideas, where we can bring our policies, but where we can also be inspired by ideas and policies of the others. Thank you very much.
I thank you. The last in the first round is Portugal. It has not yet served to the Council, and it has ratified 8 Human Rights Court treaties. Mr. João Madureira, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I also wish to thank the organizers of this event and also the opportunity to be here. I invite you also to collect the brochure regarding our candidature, which contains the elements of the candidature and as well as the pledges. They are on the side of the room. Portugal is strongly committed to the promotion and protection of human rights and fundamental freedoms. This is, for us, a central pillar of our democracy, and this commitment is deeply enshrined in our constitution, a constitution that was born out of the restoration of democracy in our country. In fact, the constitution recognizes a very complete set of human rights, both civil, political, as well as economic, social, and cultural. Moreover, it recognizes the primacy of human rights, including the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international treaties duly ratified by our country. These treaties are directly applicable in the domestic order and can be invoked before the courts and are binding to public and private entities. Civil servants are responsible for any violation of human rights perpetrated in the framework of their functions. And a constitutional court ensures the supervision of the constitutionality of law and judicial decisions, and that they are respect human rights constitutional guaranteed. Finally, also, Portugal has independent human rights institution, the ombudsperson, with the responsibility of overseeing and safeguarding human rights and providing effective remedies when violations take place. I say all this, it's a very solid legal and constitutional framework, but I say this only to highlight what's the following. The important question is how to turn it into reality. We may have a very solid framework, but the importance is how to bring this into reality. As you know, the realization of human rights is a never-ending task. As in international context, we know it from here, with steps forward and steps back sometimes. Also, at national level, it is crucial to steadily narrow the gap between the ideals recognized by human rights treaties and commitments and the reality on the ground. And governments have a primary responsibility. They have to be active and attentive to promote the realization of human rights, to prevent and correct situations of discriminations, and to provide conditions to ensure the enjoyment of human rights. And I say this because this recognizing this important task, we have established some time ago a Portuguese National Human Rights Committee, an interministerial coordination mechanism which includes all relevant departments of public administration and where also independent human rights institutions take part, ombudsperson and attorney general, and the Portuguese National Human Rights Committee meets regularly with civil society organizations in advancing human rights and addressing critical areas of concern, including domestic violence and human trafficking. We are convinced that this important forum, the committee, the National Committee on Human Rights, provides a strong platform for a permanent, open, and constructive dialogue between states, institutions, and representatives of the civil society. And the Portuguese National Human Rights Committee has played an important role in monitoring legal policy and other measures to advance the realization of human rights and the assessment of their impact to identify emerging concerns and necessary policy responses, including several national human rights sectorial plans that were prompted from the discussion of the Human Rights National Committee. Of course, as part of this process, important challenges have been considered. And over the recent years, as you may know, Portugal has been facing a difficult economic and financial crisis, having been subjected to a program of austerity measures with a significant social and economic impact. And in April 2011, the Portuguese government requested the financial assistance from the International Monetary Fund, the European Commission, and the European Central Bank, and subsequently an economic and financial adjustment program was put in place, which required drastic cut in public spending. These austerity measures had a strong impact in the life of many Portuguese families, and committed to minimize the impact of the crisis, particularly on the most vulnerable persons, the government launched in October 2011 a social emergency plan with an emphasis on families, children, and the elderly and persons with disabilities. This is a process that has been kept under constant scrutiny with a view to safeguarding the promotion and protection of human rights. Now, turning on the Human Rights Council, the role and assistance, we recognize the crucial role of the Human Rights Council. It is the most important UN forum to promote the consolidation of human rights, to address emergent concerns, and to examine and respond to human rights violations around the world. Portugal has been a steady supporter of Human Rights Council and its mechanisms, and it was also an active player in the former Commission of Human Rights. Moreover, we believe that the UPR process is strategic to help advance the protection of human rights at the national and international levels. Portugal takes very seriously the process and the recommendations of the UPR. And has implemented 86 of the 89 recommendations made to Portugal during the first UPR held in 2009. It is undeniable that the UPR exercise has contributed tremendously to a regular reflection on an improvement of the human rights situation in the country. Having just finalized the second review by the UPR, where Portugal accepted 139 of the 151 recommendations made, we are certain that the implementation of the recommendations made to Portugal will contribute to further improve the human rights situation in Portugal. The human rights mechanism has, in Portugal's experience, helped raise wider awareness about the importance of human rights and how to better address challenges faced, discuss the best ways forward, and adopt the necessary initiatives to respond to concerns identified. That's effectively a true mechanism, in our view, to assist and guide states in their human rights endeavors. And also, we also recognize the essential role in this regard played by the special procedures of the Human Rights Council. And thanks to the independence of their mandates and their open and constructive dialogue with member states, as well as the important cooperation with civil society organizations, these mechanisms help monitor and promote the improvement of human rights around the world. As an expression of its commitment to their important role, Portugal has a standing invitation, as it was mentioned here by Latvia a while ago, has accepted a standing invitation to all special procedures. And in early 2015, next year, we will welcome the visit of the Special Rapporteur on the Independence of Judges and Lawyers, Mrs. Gabriela Nol. Although not yet a member of the Human Rights Council, Portugal has been actively contributing to its work, such as in initiatives to advance the economic, social, and cultural rights, including the right to education, as well on initiatives to promote the abolition of the death penalty.
Time.
We also think that the participation of Portugal in the Human Rights Council, while contributing to enhance human rights protection in the world, will in itself contribute as well to stimulate the reflection on human rights at national level and the promotion of the national human rights agenda. And in concluding, at the international level, Portugal will continue to support a strong and effective multilateral human rights system that can impartially monitor the implementation by all states of their human rights obligations, upholding universality, indivisibility, inalienability, and interdependence of all human rights is Portugal's main objective. It was in this spirit that we presented our candidacy to the Human Rights Council for the term of 2015 and 2017. Portugal was an active player in the former Human Rights Commission and has been a staunch supporter of the Human Rights Council, but has yet to be a member of the Council. If elected, Portugal pledges to work closely with Human Rights Council's mechanisms, with all states, and with civil society organizations and other key stakeholders in order to foster dialogue, build bridges, and achieve consensus without compromising fundamental values and principles. This is also the way we have acted in the former Commission of Human Rights and most recently in our participation in the Security Council in the 2011 and 2012, where we could again witness the importance of benefiting from the close cooperation of the NGO community with their invaluable insight and contribution on human rights issues relevant to those international and national agendas. We pledge to continue in the same way during our mandate in the Human Rights Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Portugal. Thank you all. The floor is now open for questions from the audience. In order to make the best use of our time, please ask concise questions. Questions can be either of general nature or directed to a specific candidate. We will take first a couple of questions from the floor, from Twitter, and then we will invite candidates to respond. When taking the floor, please introduce yourself. The floor is open. The floor is open. Yes, please. Introduce yourself and ask the question. Just press the button and indicate for technicians your location. Yeah, the other one works.
Thank you. My name is Neha Sood. I'm with Action Canada for Population and Development and a coalition called the Sexual Rights Initiative. I'd first like to convey my thanks to the permanent missions of Uruguay and Tunisia and to Amnesty International and the International Service for Human Rights for convening this very important event. And thanks also to those candidates for the Human Rights Council elections who made their pledges and commitments public. And we request the others to do the same so that we can engage with these more constructively. I have three specific questions for all the panelists. First being how I'd like to hear from you how you plan to advance reproductive and sexual rights issues at the Human Rights Council, either through existing areas of work or new areas of work. The second question is how you plan to defend the rights of sexual and reproductive rights defenders in their engagement with the Council and its different mechanisms. And lastly, how you plan to strengthen more generally civil society participation in the working of the Human Rights Council, which we are seeing certain sort of restrictions and shrinking of such participation. For example, the utilization of procedures like point of order when they may not be most appropriate in order to silence civil society. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Yes, please. First row. Yes. Yes, lady. Yes. Try pressing around.
Thank you. Sorry for the. Oh, here we go. For the technical confusion. Thank you very much to all the organizers and for the panelists for availing themselves to put forward their candidature and to responding to Mr. Simonovic's question. My question is very short. I'm from Norway. Sorry about lack of introduction. From Norway, and my question is, how do you plan to support the agenda of protecting human rights defenders if you are elected to the Human Rights Council? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have seen here an indication. Yes, please.
There we go. Stephanie Johansson from the Global Justice Center. I have a country-specific question, and I want to thank the candidates for participating in this discussion and the organizer for organizing this event. Despite positive steps, the human rights situation in Myanmar remains very serious. Amongst others, sexual violence against girls and women perpetrated by armed groups in Myanmar continues. As a member of the Human Rights Council, how will your country support the work of the Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in Myanmar? Thank you.
I thank you. We have two questions, and now I will close the list of questions. Okay, please. Ireland, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, Ireland. Firstly, my sincere thanks to all the Human Rights Council candidate countries for their presentations today. Membership of the Council is a true privilege, and Ireland remains honoured by the faith that was placed in us 2 years ago when we were elected ourselves to the Council. I've very scarred memories of this session 2 years ago, but I think it was a very positive step, and we're happy to be here again today. My first question is, firstly, some of you have touched on this already, but what would be your state's human rights priorities if elected to the Council? And second, the Human Rights Council is a key forum for open and inclusive debate on human rights issues, and we must work to protect the openness and transparency of Council deliberations. In this regard, though, I'd note with concern the use of no-action motions during Council sessions. Ireland's position on such motions is that there can seldom be justification for their use, but recent Council sessions have seen such motions being tabled, which have had the effect of shutting down legitimate debate on important aspects of resolutions before the Council, which impacts on the transparency and accountability of the deliberations. I'd be very interested to hear the views of the candidates regarding the use of such motions and what can be done to strengthen transparency at the Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, you have the floor. Okay, well, while we are trying to provide the floor, just a procedural comment. We will be offering candidates opportunity to answer to those questions in alphabetical order. And I will repeat briefly questions. Do not take all questions, candidates. Select the ones you like. Some will be advantaged or disadvantaged by the alphabetical order, but I suggest you to concentrate on one or two questions. However, you will have at your disposal 2 minutes to use them the best you can, addressing one, two, or all questions. But after 2 minutes, I will have to cut you with your answer. So, please, you have the floor.
Hello? Okay. This is Yusuf Sa'i with the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission. Thank you to the organizers and especially to the candidates for making themselves available for this critical discussion. If the candidates feel up to the challenge, I'd love to hear about their experience dealing with limitations on free expression and free association in the particular context of sexual orientation and gender identity. Thank you.
I thank you very much. Okay, now let us start with Albania. Albania, your 2 minutes have started right now.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Albania has I will concentrate on the transparency of the council and the gender participation of in the council. Albania has supported an open and transparent council, and will, if elected, will continue to give our contribution in this regard. As regard the human rights defenders, will have always supported them, and with regard of the mandate of the Myanmar, if the situation continues so, will keep asking for the renewal of the mandate of the special rapporteur on this regard. As far as the use of the rules of procedure to prevent the civil society from saying the words, Albania will be supportive to all initiatives that will enable the civil society and everyone to say the to have a floor to have an opportunity to express their opinions and to be part of the discussions of the universal rights of human rights.
Thank you, Albania. Okay. Bolivia, you have the floor.
Thank you. Hay dos aspectos que nosotros quisiéramos resaltar como Bolivia con relación a qué áreas temáticas pensamos desarrollar una vez que estemos en el Consejo de Derechos Humanos. Creo que uno de los...
There are two areas that I'd like to highlight in regard to thematic areas that we would like to develop as a member of the Council.
Un área temática que consideramos importante abordar es el tema del agua. Creo que el derecho al agua potable, Bolivia ha dado varias muestras de que tiene que trabajar en este sentido. Hemos logrado una resolución de Naciones Unidas.
One of the areas that we would focus on is the right to water. Bolivia is interested in working within the council in that regard.
Y el tema de la participación de la sociedad civil. Bolivia vive un momento histórico logrado a partir de los movimientos sociales, de la participación de su sociedad civil, de manera que este es uno de los aspectos más importantes que también pensamos priorizar.
We would also be wishing to prioritize the participation of civil society. Bolivia is an important moment in its history and has come here through the work of the social movement and civil society and its participation is important to us.
Y finalmente otro aspecto fundamental tiene que ver con este diálogo abierto que consideramos entre todos los países. Con plena igualdad de todos. Creo que este es uno de los aspectos que debemos resaltar y que vamos a desarrollarlo en el Consejo de Derechos Humanos.
And another fundamental aspect that we would wish to work on is promoting open dialogue between countries and equality between all. This would be something that we would put great emphasis on if we were to be a member of the Council.
Thank you.
I thank you, and I just was made aware that we received two questions by Twitter. One is, how can the Human Rights Council better contribute to preventing serious human rights violations? What will your country do about prevention? It's a question from Peter Splinter. Amnesty International. And the other question from Global Justice Center is, how will candidates ensure prevention, investigation, and accountability for violence against women? So now, Botswana, your 2 minutes are on.
Thank you again, Mr. Moderator. I will try to respond to two questions. I think the first one was from Norway regarding protection of human rights defenders. I think this is an issue that Botswana prioritizes to such an extent that we recently joined an initiative, I think it was sometime last year, to demonstrate that commitment to the human rights system and to ensure that it tries to work seamlessly with the international system in protecting the human rights of those defenders. We were co-sponsors of Resolution 2424, which we hope which we continue to be committed to, and we'll do what we have to in order to ensure that it receives the acceptance that we feel is it deserves. And there was another question. I didn't get it correctly in full, but it was regarding the situation in Myanmar. Botswana is concerned and has continued to be concerned about the grave violation of human rights everywhere. But in regards to Myanmar, we have consistently supported resolutions both at the General Assembly and at the Human Rights Council, which have endeavored to canvass the international community to do something to address those abuses, those violations. And we are continuing to work with the Council to try to, as a member of the Council, to try to support Myanmar. Those are the two questions, Mr. Moderator, that I thought I could respond to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Botswana, and I give the floor to Costa Rica.
Thank you very much. I'm going to try to answer most of the questions. Regarding the priorities, as during our membership of the Human Rights Council, Costa Rica has worked always in alliance with other members in initiatives regarding promotion of human rights education and training, also the link between human rights and environment, and the right to peace among others. And we will continue working on these priorities. We have also worked in an initiative with two other countries very related with the issue of human rights defenders, which we have supported as well, but we have also worked on the resolution on the promotion and protection of human rights in the context of peaceful protest. That will be something that we will continue promoting as well. Regarding our position on the no-action motions, we have also a principal position of opposition to the no-action motions. From our point of view, all issues deserve a consideration, and countries need to have the opportunity to give their opinion on every issue that member states would like to put to the consideration of the Council. In the work of the Council, we foster dialogue and also have been working towards giving priority to bridge the gaps among different actors through a constructive engagement for the advancement of human rights. And therefore, we believe that the most important is to be able to consider all the questions that the Council is requested to consider. Very briefly, regarding the question on LGBTI, I just want to share the experience in Costa Rica. The new government for the 17th of May, in the Day Against the Discrimination for Sexual Orientation.
Time.
Oh, well, I just wanted to share that we put in the presidential house the diversity flag,
But even for the government, sometimes that brings some criticism. And I just want to share that we put it as a symbol of that the presidential house is a presidential house for everyone in Costa Rica. Thank you.
Thank you. And I give the floor to Latvia.
Thank you. There was a question about the human rights priorities of countries in the Council. And for Latvia, it will be, if elected, gender equality and women's empowerment. It has been our long-standing priority, and we are also member of UN Women Executive Board and were president of the board last year. And we strongly support the appropriate and proper reflection of gender equality in the new post-2015 agenda and consider that ending violence against women, promoting women's economic empowerment and participation at different levels is of particular importance. Concerning what can be done on preventing domestic violence and violence against women in general, recently Latvia nationally adopted a package of legislative provisions which provide greater protection for victims of domestic violence and provides for civil protection orders separating victim from the perpetrator, and we'll continue to advance this topic both within the UN Women Executive Board and also in the UN and in the Human Rights Council if elected. The second priority is safeguarding human rights and freedom of expression and assembly when using new information and communication technologies, and we think that even with the development of those technologies, freedom of expression should be observed, and all the restrictions should be very carefully considered according to the international standards. Of course, we support the involvement of civil society nationally and also in the Human Rights Council, and are ready to support and promote any initiatives to further facilitate this. Thank you.
Thank you. I give the floor to Netherlands.
Thank you. I don't think we have new priorities when we become a member of the Human Rights Council, but our priorities are very clear. And I think one of the main priorities for us is human rights defenders and involvement of civil society. And not only as a member, but we've been doing that for some time now. We believe that human rights defenders and human rights organizations are the agents of change that can bring about improvement of human rights situations in their own countries. So we try to support them, and I think we want to, when we are a member of the Human Rights Council, continue to support them, but also try to involve them more closely with the work of the Council. We have a Human Rights Fund, which focuses also on human rights defenders, and I'll give you two examples which are also related to the questions. We have supported an important project by a group called AHUM in Pakistan, which is an organization, an NGO, which focuses on reproductive and sexual rights in Pakistan, which is a very delicate matter in that country. And we found this so important that we awarded them our National Tulip Award for Human Rights last year. We also support many LGBTI organizations in several countries, also not the most easy countries to work in, like Zimbabwe and Uganda. And we will continue to do that. We also offer support in the project which is called Shelter City, where we invite human rights defenders who are really sort of feeling the heat on them to come to the Netherlands, to come to a safe place for a couple of months so that they can have some time out, that they can work on their network and come back again to their country with new energy. To the question of Peter Splinter from Amnesty in Geneva, I think if the Human Rights Council was not there to work on preventing violations, it would be useless. I think that's the crucial thing why we want to become a member. I know it's not a one-on-one relation that you can point on, but I think our job as the Human Rights Council, as a member of the Human Rights Council, is exactly to increase attention, to increase, accountability, so that we can hope that the Human Rights Council will help to prevent violations.
Thank you, and I give the floor to Portugal.
Thank you. I would like to stress the dynamics between the Human Rights Council and countries and the states. And in this regard, to respond to the questions, it was because of mainly also of the first UPR cycle, where there were a lot, some recommendations. There was an increasing movement also in Portugal to several legislative amendments to reinforce human rights. And I say that, for instance, as an example, I will mention the law of May 2010 that allows same-sex marriage. And also legislation has been reformed and national action plans to strengthen human rights in the areas of LGBT rights, sexual orientation and gender identity, to prevent sexual and gender-based violence, also in human trafficking and female genital mutilation, and to promote the social inclusion of immigrants and the Roma. So all these came as a movement dynamically put forward by the Human Rights Council as well. Then it will come also to this question of prevention. Of course, the importance is on prevention. And because we have a human rights, a national human rights council, that will help us also to detect cases, new emerging challenges, that will also be useful for us in the Human Rights Council to look at the prevention that we need. National Human Rights Council is also a very important element, structural element in you can look at different areas that came up from the discussion in this National Human Rights Committee. For instance, the National Plan on Gender Equality, the National Plan on to combat domestic and gender-based violence, the National Plan to combat human trafficking, the programs of actions for the elimination of female genital mutilation, the plans for social inclusion of gypsies in communities. And I would continue, but just to spare time, it means that there are concentration, the focus that comes from discussion within this interdepartmental, interministerial body.
Thank you, Portugal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Let me congratulate candidates for their willingness to participate in this challenging exercise and for their great human rights performance. I also would like to thank audience here in New York as well as our virtual audience for being with us and for your contribution. See you next year with even more candidates in this transparency exercise. Thank you all.